So we are holding a continuation to what we learned yesterday, the Dvar Malchus, the key, what we call the key to the redemption in our hands, episode 1, part 3, Dvar Malchus, Parshas Tazria. So yesterday we left off that this phenomenal explanation, that the idea of the leper, which we know Mashiach is also called the leper, and the time of exile is referred to the time of leprosy, that the idea of the leper is that we're dealing with something incredibly holy. This individual is contacting, his soul is contacting, is interacting, he's engaging with a very, very lofty level of energy, a very high level of energy, a lofty spiritual godly light. But the godly light is extremely, extremely powerful and beyond the containers of this individual. As a result of that, it's kind of causing this individual, to get hyper. It's pulling, it's like acting as this unbelievable magnetic pull that's kind of suctioning up this individual's soul and elevating it all the way up into the infinite, into the boundless, creating this separation between the soul and everyday life, so that the person is not so concerned with the details of earthly living, to live in accordance in a way that they will be the most beneficial and enhancing the lives and the people and the physical world in general. Because they're obsessed with this experience, they're tripping out on a spiritual experience, and they're so enjoying this spiritual experience that they're forgetting that they're on a mission here in this world to illuminate the world. That's the idea of tzaras. It's an intense light, and that's why it can cause a certain neglect and in a person's behavior. In other words, before they've ever encountered and found this exciting energy, this exciting thing in their life, this higher level of spirituality, they were pretty concerned and pretty involved and pretty mindful of every small thing they do in their life to be in accordance to God's intent in a righteous manner. But when you get carried away with some excitement, sometimes you lose the focus and the significance of realizing that God's desire is to bring everything down here to earth, not to ascend up to heaven. And this is the mistake, and this is the experience of the Metzora. How do you heal the Tzaras? So then, you know, when a person as a result of this Tzaras, of this leprosy, misbehaves, if there's any kind of defect in their service, in their connection, in their behavior, it's only superficial, it's only external, because we're not dealing over here with, God forbid, the person is an evil, dark human being. There's just a tiny little bit of a neglect of oversight in everything that they do because they're withdrawn into a higher realm. They're caught up in this ecstasy, in this beyond life energy, which is a good energy. But the purpose over here is God wants you to capture it, internalize it, and share it with the world. But doing that takes time, it takes work, it takes a need to compress the light, to reduce it, to compact it, and which are things that people that like the hoo-ha of the enormous experience, they don't want to do that because they'd rather just experience the exhilaration of this trip above. So how do you heal the situation? You have to illuminate. You have to realize that the root of this person's deficiency is not negative. The root of it is something, because they're excited about something very high, they're passionate about something, and you just have to help them figure out how to channel it down. Now, in order to channel it down, again, it takes humility. It takes their ability to overcome the immediate gratification of the intensity of the enjoyment of the experience, and have to think about others, have to think about what might scare others away, might overwhelm others, and not that I don't have a message, not that I don't have a teaching, not that I don't have what I need to teach, but I need to be a little bit more patient and I need to share it with others drip by drip, drop by drop, instead of in one shot where I can smash and overwhelm their vessels as well. That's the idea. So you take a humility. The humility is which can help a person transition from the trend from to not to get lost in this intense experience, but to funnel it and bring it down, to surrender themselves to their mission. Which is the and by doing that, they're actually going to capture this transcendental light and pull it downward. And we've learned that the power of the Torah has that ability, the unification of this intense light and drawing it down. As it is by the individual Metzorah, the same thing, the Rebbe, this is what we're holding, we just started touching upon this in chapter number 7 in the Dvar Malchus. The Rebbe says that's really what exile is all about. Exile to begin with is not God angry, it's not some real, real great darkness, it's not some satanic force. When we say exile, we mean all the suffering, pain that is unimaginable, all the oceans of tears, all the rivers of blood, the persecutions, the darkness, the difficulties, the mental blockages, the emotional pain, all this that mankind has suffered, and the Jewish people in particular have been through, which is the exile, and all this darkness. It is important to recognize that it's not what it seems to be. In essence, it's a newer, deeper divine revelation that is brewing in heaven, and God is ready to give it to the world. And precisely because there is something so phenomenally great and something awesome that is ready to come down, it causes that the divine presence within the world rises upward to receive it. In that suction, in that great spiritual suction, when the divinity that was once present in the world is getting caught up with something higher, and as a result of that rising upwards, as the Rebbe brings from the idea of the Zohar, where the Zohar says during the time of exile, Kuche Berichu Salik Li'elo Li'elo, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which means the divine presence in the world, is in a state of the masculine element of the divine presence in the world. The Shekhinah never departs. The Shekhinah is the feminine element, is always within the creation, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, her husband, is in a state of transcendence. He's escaping into the infinite, and as a result of that, we end up with a world that has far less divine revelation. And as a result of that, all the chaos, darkness, suffering, pain, and misery is coming. So number one, we really have to realize that's just like by the Tzaraas, since the essence of it is not bad, but that there is a newer light coming to the world, and eventually it's going to be drawn down into the world. It's only for the time being, it's hovering above us. And that's causing a withdrawal, and it's causing darkness. But we have to realize that the wounds that it's creating, the havoc and the suffering and the pain, and as a result of that, also the sinfulness, because a lack of godliness causes people to make mistakes and do the wrong things. All this, people's lessening of their sensitivity to the divine, and so on and so forth. This is the beauty of the Rebbe. The Rebbe says we have to realize it's not really who the world is. Just like the leper, because the root of their misbehavior, even there is misbehavior, there are certain things, but because the root of it is something spiritual, something good, as a result of that, even when they're misbehaving, it's only superficial on the outside. So too, the Rebbe looks at all the darkness of the world and says it's superficial. Not really. It's not really what men and the human race and human beings created in the image of God, and definitely not the Jewish people, are never really, really, really sinful and rotten at the core. It's a superficial, it's an external thing. And yes, superficial doesn't mean superficial. It means enough that it's affecting behavior of people. But if you dig deeper, you realize that there's a lot of goodwill, a lot of good heart, and a lot of good people out there, even if not everybody's doing the right thing all the time. Now, that doesn't come to excuse anything, that the behavior is not important. We are accountable for our behavior, but it's still important to know that we shouldn't, God forbid, throw our hands up in despair, like we discussed on Monday night when we spoke about a world gone mad, to a point where we already like give up and say, this is so ferocious, it's so horrible. Recognize it's not that way. There is great godly light coming to the world. It's just suctioning up, and it's causing a little bit of a temporary darkness right now. So what happens? How do you heal the exile? you don't change the exile by bringing something new. You don't run away from the exile. You don't have to, you know, suddenly now bring in something that wasn't here before. The rectification of the exile is by recognizing that the redemption is the exile itself. If we can only crack open the exile and get to the root of all the darknesses that we have, our own darknesses, our own demons and our own negativities, if we can only recognize that deep inside of them there is something very, very powerful and something very holy and something very meaningful. It's just masquerading and pretending and coming down in a perverted way. So instead of trying to flush it all out and to destroy ourselves, we recognize that I just got to go deeper a little bit, recognize what is it truly that's there? What is it truly that I want? What is the true meaning of all this energy inside of me and so on and so forth, which might seem as dark energy. Maybe there's something deeper over here on a personal level and in the world as a whole. You have to look deeper to open it up. And this is where the Rebbe drops an amazing secret. He says, when you take a look, and this is what's going to follow through in the next many, many talks, the Rebbe is going to focus on these particular points, in which he tells us that when you take a look at the word galus, the word for exile is galut, exile, but also the word gola. Gola means to be a wanderer, to go into exile. And the word for redemption is geula. And the difference between the two is they're one letter. They're the same word. They have gimel and vav lamid hey is the word gola. And when you add one aleph to it, it becomes from gola becomes gula. What's aleph? Aleph is the first letter, but aleph also is indicative of God. Alufa shalom. In other words, when we look for the godly phenomenon in the darkness, if we find the God particle, what they once called the God particle, if we find the God particle in all the pain and in all the suffering, then not only don't we have suffering, we actually experience the greatest bliss and ecstasy because we open up what that suffering is all about. It's really just a higher, more intense energy that we have not been vessels yet for. Like we discussed yesterday, that the word for nega, which means affliction, which is the whole, which the affliction is the affliction of exile, is really the same letters as the word oneg. It's really a very, very deep, infinite divine pleasure. But it's still now, we're not, these are the lights, the intense lights of chaos that we discussed yesterday, that shattered because the vessel shattered because they couldn't facilitate the light, and then you end up with a mess. So we got to realize that. We got to start recognizing that we just have to dig deeper, understand the world deeper, understand ourselves deeper, understand each other deeper, understand when we see people acting in a corrupt way, what do they really want? What are their souls crying out for? What are they really crying out? And then when we go deeper, doesn't mean we don't deal with criminals and we don't deal with people that are doing bad stuff with the way that we're supposed to deal with them, because that's how you keep civilization going. But at the same time, we recognize that the underlying factors is because people are really yearning for something. They're seeking something. So maybe we should pay a little bit more attention and start answering the questions that people have, answering their spiritual questions, even if they're not asking it, but their souls are asking. They're crying out for it. Maybe we need to teach a little more and get out there a little more and reach the youth and reach the people that are making all this trouble. Get in there deeply and see what it's really all about, what's going on. And that's taking the darkness itself. We're never going to get redemption by looking elsewhere. We just got to look into the darkness. We got to find the God particle within the darkness. We got to insert the aleph into the exile, and the very same world will become redemption. The very same world will become redemption. I'll give a little example. We're living today in a world where there's all this cuckoo-ness and craziness of gender equality. And the transitioning, people are all into transitioning, and this is being pushed. And now that is so people look at it and say, this is crazy. This is destruction. This is destroying God's world. God created the world male and female. And I discussed about this a little bit on Monday. Now, not to take away from the negative of this. This is a terrible, terrible thing, because it's really messing with the very fundamentals of God's creation. But let's give a deeper look and see, maybe there is something really godly that's driving it. And the answer is there really is something awesomely godly which is associated with Mashiach. It's just that people don't have the vessels to translate and understand it, so they're mistranslating it And it's becoming a negative form of a behavior, a social movement that is one of the worst social movements ever. Yet, it's wreaking havoc on the world. Yet, this is an indication of an incredible godly light. Why? Because throughout history, just going to do this very briefly, throughout history, male was always on a higher level than female in the sense that, and you see that in the world, man, there was always a patriarchal world where the male was always dominating simply because the male was physically stronger. And as a result of that, women were always mistreated or treated with second class citizens in the sense. They were not given the respect, the dignity, and the honor that they should have been given throughout all of history. But as we're looking at the world, we're watching that there is a change. And the feminine has been rising. We had a class over here called The Rise of the Feminine by Rabbi Manusi. It was a phenomenal class. There he discusses this at great length. But in the time of Mashiach, which is as we're getting closer to it, the whole messianic experience, according to Hasidic and Kabbalistic teachings, is the rise of the feminine to the point that the woman will rise to be equal to the man. That means the feminine energy, which is the energy of the recipient, will be as high and equal and as an equal contributor to the male, the giver, and the recipient will stand face to face equal. And then later, it will even work the other way around, where the female energy will rise above the male energy. So first it will equal out. And this is all hinted to in one of the prophecies that says that the light of the moon will be like the light of the sun. And so sun is male and the moon is female. So once you have the sun and the moon being equal, that means that it will translate into a huge upgrade in the feminine world. Now, as that energy is coming into the world, where there is becoming an equality, an equal, a force that is equalizing men and women, that energy is here in the universe. Now, it's not meant to say that therefore there is no men and there is no woman. No, it means there is men and there is women, but there is an equal contribution to be made by both of them. And as we said, the woman rises equal to the man, but then she rises even higher, which is related to the whole purpose of existence and creation, where the physical will be higher than the spiritual, earth will be higher than heaven, and female will be higher than male. But first there is a point where there is a meeting of them where they become actually face to face, totally equal. Now, as that energy is floating into the universe, into the subconscious of people, but people don't have the right teaching and guidance and understanding to be able to translate that into and funnel that into healthy way of living, what happens is they think it means there's no difference between men and women, and therefore men should become women and women should become men. And this has become such a powerful force that we must immediately take it to the next generation. So even if you're a six-year-old kid, you have to know immediately, it has to be told to you by all your teachers and educators and the whole school, and everybody has to tell you that if you choose to be if you're a boy, you can choose to be a girl. If you're a girl, you can be choose to be another kid. Has no idea what we're talking to him or her. And yet we're making these kids crazy. We're destroying society. But really, what is it? It's a powerful, high, incredible godly light. It's the future. It's the spirituality of the future. But it's not digested correctly into the minds of people. So our work needs to be not to yell at it and scream at it, but to educate it. That's the point, to teach, to write the books and to explain, as Rabbi Manusi was talking about this. He's working on it. This is something that should be done. People should understand what's going on. In that sense, we can kind of just put it where it belongs in the right setting. And when it's placed in the right setting, it will only enhance the godly in the world. This is just an example of this idea. So based on all of this, but the Rebbe says, here's the thing. In order for us to be able to achieve this, that these higher, on a cosmic level, these higher great intense lights should be able to be facilitated and come down into vessels, which means, again, it takes work to be able to humble these energies so that they can contract themselves and fit themselves to the vessels. They don't have to remain above. So in order for us to do that, we have to, as we said before, the only way to do that is through absolute humility, is through absolute self-abnegation. So, and the Rebbe says, so that's why, that's part of what happens during the time of exile. During the time of exile, the exile, the hardships, the difficulties of life force us into a type of service, of egoless service. When we're living and life is good, both materially and spiritually, even if we're in a good headspace and we're inspired and we're living our lives to our godly potential and so on and so forth, we can't help being motivated for personal interests, which means we keep ourselves very, very much in the mix. And when you keep yourself in the mix, and you're not, then you're limited to only self, and you don't have then the vessels to be able to receive the infinite light. The only way to receive the infinite light is to melt the ego completely. Melting the ego completely does not happen in regular, comfortable living. It only happens under duress and under stress and under the hardships. And then when we're challenged and we go through the difficult, and yet we don't want, and we can't, because we have a divine spark, we have a deep, deep commitment, and we can't let go, and then we have no choice but to let go of ourselves completely, because we with our limited powers cannot survive, cannot maintain and live a productive, spiritual, holy life when there's such intense pressure. So we have no choice but to surrender ourselves completely to God that's bigger than us. And when we surrender ourselves completely and it's all about Him, not about us, then we become supermen. We have superpower. And then we can withstand the difficulties of exile. But what are we gaining as a result of that? We expand our vessels now to be able to receive this infinite light that's causing the exile and causing the darkness to begin with. So we open up now to receive all this infinite light, and we've achieved the idea of revealing the Aleph in the exile, because we reveal what the God element of it is, and that is this infinite infusion, and we're vessels to receive it, and we take it. That's why the Rebbe also says an amazing thing. He brings from the Tzemach Tzedek, his great great the Tzemach Tzedek, yeah, his great grandfather, where it says in the pasuk, the verse, this is in footnote 54, like the days of when you went out of Egypt, I will show you wonders. So what does it mean? I will show you wonders. He says as follows: the wonders are what? The word wonder, niflaot, which means wonders, is the root of the word is pele. Pele means that which is above your head. What God is really saying in this thing is that it's referring to, the Tzemach Tzedek says, it's referring to the idea that what's the pele? What will God show us in the future? I will show you the pele. I'll show you the ones. What's the wonders? So the Tzemach Tzedek says, well, it says that in the time of exile, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is Hashem's manifestation, Salik departs, Le'ela Le'ela. He said it earlier. Why does God depart above? Where is He departing? He's departing above the finite world. He's going into the infinite, because that's where the energy is bubbling. So He rises upward. So He says, that's the Pele, that's the wonder, that place where Hashem has departed to, into that elevated place, that's the wonder. But the problem now is that it's in a state above the world, above the cosmos. It's higher than creation. So God says, like the days when you went out of Egypt, I will show you wonders, which means that's the redemption. The redemption is that transcendence, which is really the root of the whole exile, that's the wonders that I will show you. I will reveal it. I will reveal you the true godliness that's behind all the darkness. And now you'll be a vessel to receive it. Now we go on to chapter 8. This is based on this, we will understand finally the connection between the two Torah portions that we asked. We asked a couple of questions at the beginning in class number one, the Torah portion called Tazria Metzora. And but now we'll understand why we asked. The main question was that Tazria means birth, which is referring to redemption, which is a type of birth. But yet the Torah portion about Tazria is talking all about leprosy, which is the opposite of birth. It's talking about pain and suffering and exile. The other Torah portion is called Metzora, which Metzora means leprosy, which is referring to the time of pain and suffering and exile. And yet content of that Torah portion is the day of the healing of which is the coming of Mashiach. So it seems like the two parshiyos switch their titles. So what's the answer? Now we have the answer. If exile and redemption would be two separate things, there's exile, that's punishment. And that's a time of God's abandonment, and you're in a dark, godless existence. You're living dominated by demons and Satan and all kinds of negativity, and that's where you are. And then there are going to be good times, a complete separate entity. God will finally reconcile with the world. He will beat the forces of impurity and will remove them from the face of the earth, from dominating the planet. And God will move in and the world will suddenly be good. It's a whole new reality. Then the questions would be questions. But when we realize that the darkness to begin with, the exile to begin with, is nothing more than the redemption, it's the first stage of the redemption. That is when God wants to upgrade his goodness for the world. When Hashem says, the world till now has been receiving my light that I've been screaming and filtering through a tiny little keyhole. But that's not the goodness I want to give you. I want to give you an infinite, boundless goodness. And this way, I mean, God starts to deliver it, but we can't hold it. We can't facilitate it. So that light then goes up around and creates the suction and pulls the energy out and leaves us in the dark, leaves us in the confusion. But what is it from the very beginning? What is it? It's an awesomely great light. So when we realize that, and then all we need to do now is to stretch through our intense work in the darkness, which stretches us and opens us up to be able to facilitate us of this infinite. So now we'll understand that first Torah portion, which its name is Tazria, which Tazria means birth, which means redemption. What is the content of the redemption? The content of the redemption is the exile. Because the stuff that the redemption is made out of is exile. The redemption is made out of the exile, out of the darkness. Because the darkness itself is the redemption. It's just now seen as dark. It would be something like this. It's like a couple that get married and they, you know, and they decide they want to have children. They really want to have children. So what do they want? They want the child. They want the baby. And then we let them know. And we say, listen here, you want the baby, you got to choose pregnancy. The only way you can have the baby is you're going to have your pregnancy. It's going to be if you want to take someone else's child in the story, but it's to be your child, and you created this child. There's no way to have that baby unless you have pregnancy. Oy gevald, pregnancy. Pregnancy is difficult. It's hard. Morning sickness and discomfort and 9 months of it, and then birth and labor pains and the whole thing. We don't want that. We don't want that. The man doesn't want it because his wife is going to be difficult and he cares for her, number one. Plus, her relationship with him was not going to be so easy as we know is in times of pregnancy. Women have far less tolerance and they snap much more and so on and so forth because of the difficulties that they're in. And the woman, of course, is going to go through the hardship and she says, no, I want birth. And he said, listen here, birth is made up of the stuff of pregnancy. There's nothing new in birth. It's just a real revelation of that, of the real blessing that you've had. A woman becomes pregnant and she never knew what pregnancy is. Imagine that. A woman who never knew what pregnancy is, she's become pregnant. She looks at herself and she starts thinking two things. First of all, she's miserable. She's horrible. She thinks she's got some illness, some kind of tumor that's growing in her belly. She's looking at herself every day and she's getting she's getting frustrated with her obesity and with her lack of, she's maybe not looking as beautiful as she looked before. And he's also getting frustrated, not knowing what's happening with his wife. And they're both going nuts until someone illuminates them in the facts of life that you're pregnant and from the pregnancy is going to be born a beautiful baby. Ah, it's a whole different story. So that's what we're saying over here. Tazria, the whole exile, all the pain and all the hardship of exile. You want birth, you got to be pregnant first. So therefore, the entire parsha of Tazria, which is all about birth, talks about pregnancy. Sorry, doesn't talk about pregnancy. Talks about leprosy, which leprosy is the pain, which really, in essence, as we spoke earlier, the pain of the leprosy is really the greatest light, but hasn't yet manifested. It's the same idea as the pregnancy. Once we're done with Parshas Tazria, we come to the next Torah report. What's Metzora? Metzora is the exile. The name of the parsha tells you what it's all about. It's exile. So here, when we find ourselves in exile, and we don't like it in exile, we're frustrated in exile, we're suffering in exile, and we want out, we cry out, Ebishter, God, please send us Mashiach. Take us out of here. Save us. So God tells you, what do you mean save you? You're looking to run somewhere? You want this to go away? It's not about this going away. It's about you getting deeper and bigger and opening yourself up to be able to break, open up and crack open the circumstances that I'm surrounding with you and realize the depth and the infinite blessing that's there. Once you will open up, the blessing will land, and then those very dark curses will actually flip over in 1 minute to the biggest blessing. It doesn't mean when Mashiach will come, the only thing that will change is only our vision. The main thing that will change is our vision, and as a result of that, yes, dark and difficult and hard things will actually flip over, and they will change even physically to be pleasurable and delightful. But the root of it is a shift in our consciousness and our entire spectrum of how we view everything. So something that we viewed as very dark, suddenly in the right light, we suddenly see it as an enormous blessing. It's one of the things it says when Mashiach will come, we will say to God, thank you for all the pain and the suffering. We won't be able to stop thinking because we'll realize that they were the biggest blessing. But in that time, it won't be pain anymore. For that reason, we also say, we find another this very idea. The Rebbe says in footnote number 55, that both by Metzora, by exiles, by the leprosy and by exile, we use the word the Badad. Badad means an isolation. By Metzora, it says that the leper has to sit outside of the camp, and the verse says, in isolation they should sit. Badad yeshev, in isolation they should sit. By exile, when we've gone to exile, we know in Lamentations that we sit down on the 9th of Av, the saddest night in the Jewish calendar, and we cry on the floor. What do we open up with? What does Jeremiah open up with? Echa yashva badad. How is it that this crown jewel of a city, which all the nations in the world came to visit, it was the pride of the world, the beauty of Jerusalem. How is it that now that the city is sitting in isolation? She's shamed. She's an outcast. She is rejected. Eicha yashva badad, alone without any friends. Very negative, the word the badad. But you see it parallel. Metzora, leper, sits alone, shunned by everybody. But there is another deeper meaning. Again, it all takes. Why are you in isolation? So there's isolation because you're an outcast, or you're in isolation because you're above everybody else, because you're attaining such high levels, such that no one can even come close. And that's above outstanding. There's an outcast and outstanding. The same, why are you standing alone? Because you're outstanding or because you're an outcast? So in the exile, we experience it as an outcast. But when the redemption comes, we see it as outstanding, outstandingly high, badad. It says, there's a verse that says, it doesn't bring it over here. The verse that speaks about the Jewish people will sit badad alone, on over there referring to the highest levels. Regarding Mashiach, as we're soon going to speak about Mashiach, we find the same thing, that Mashiach is going to be outstanding, meaning one alone out of all of mankind, where no one can compare to him. In Isaiah, it says, a pasuk in Yeshaya, it says, Hine yaskalavdi, behold, my servant will become intelligent, Yaram will be elevated, Venisa, Yaram will be exalted, Venisa and elevated, Vigava ma'od, very, very high, which means he will stand way above everybody else. He too will be in a state of badad, Mashiach. So you see those very, very And during the time of exile, he's an outcast. same parallel, same idea. But now we understand the content of these two parshios, because the exile and the redemption is really one and the same. It's just when we open up the exile, we can experience the redemption. With this, he also connects the next two Torah portions, because you know, in Jewish practice, every Shabbos, on Saturday, we read the Torah portion of the week. But in the afternoon service by Mincha, we read already the next Torah portion. So in the Shabbos, when the Rebbe said this Farbrengen, Tazria Metzora, he's already looking forward at after the Farbrengen would be over, they would daven Mincha. And during the Mincha services, they would read in the Torah the next Torah portion. Now the next Torah portion is also a double Torah portion. V'achrei Mos and Kedoshim. So the Rebbe says that these themes are here also in the next two Torah portions. These themes are mentioned again in I'm trying to see how long I've been talking already, yeah? In Achrei Mos and Kedoshim. Because the theme of Achrei Mos, of the Torah portion of Achrei Mos, talks about after the passing of the two sons of Aaron, the high priest. It says that God gives a warning that you shouldn't come at all times to the holy. Now, the two sons of Aaron, when they passed away, why did they pass away? They passed away similar to what we're talking about. When they passed away, it was because on the day of the inauguration of the temple, there was such an incredible godly revelation. They got swept up with the euphoria of the experience, and they allowed their souls to trip out higher and higher and higher, to a point where they couldn't bring their souls back to their body. Which means that really the issue of the taras is something that played itself out to an extreme by them. They died out of ecstasy and bliss of the divine, which seems like the most awesome thing to do, but it's actually very, very unapproved of. And that's why God warns, don't do that. I don't want that. Maybe they weren't warned. But from now on, I don't want that, God says. And the reason for that is because my expectations is that you need to, I want my permanent dwelling within the vessels, within the containers of the body. And whichever spiritual energies you connect to and experience, you must find a way to assimilate that and translate that into productive physical life on earth. So God says then, don't come in it whenever you want to the holy. You got to put borders on your spiritual experiences. Do not come into the holy whenever you want. Today's days, I'm just going to say this, on today's days, a lot of people have the ability, there's different ways, take ayahuasca and go and do different psychedelics, in which you can take yourself to very high spiritual experiences. There are times when it is helpful and definitely can bring healing. And I'm not, obviously I'm not an expert in that. Someone should check that out. But one has to know that, it has to be focused, it has to be mindful, it has to be with the intention of becoming a better person afterwards, down here in this world. But if it's just about the intensity of the higher experience, then it's not kosher. Could be, because it's not you're basically leaving your body, you're going into a much higher place, you're removing the filters that God has set up, and who gives us the right to do that? Especially if it makes you frustrated with life on earth, because you just want to always be in that high, you want to go to that place and not care about it. That's not what it is. If you can utilize those revelations and those deep experiences, and then learn how to be a better human being down here, a better parent, a better spouse, a better neighbor, a better community member, more of an influence, and you needed to deal with certain stuff, and this helps you deal with certain pains and certain things that are stuck in your system, and it helps you unstuck. That again, done in the right way, could be positive, and probably is positive, but if it stays in this ecstasy, no good. And this is what God warns Aaron, don't do this every time. There it wasn't through ayahuasca, it was through meditation and it was through entering into the holy. Don't do this. You got to bring it into the vessels. But how do you bring it into the vessels? So from that, the Rebbe says, you go to the next Torah portion, which is Kedoshim. Kedoshim means that which is holy, and holy means removed. It's only because of the God himself, the very transcendence of God himself, the holy of God is above all the energies, the rising energies and the descending energies. God is above the lights and is above the vessels. And when you surrender yourself on the deepest, deepest level of your being to one thing and one thing only, I want to live a life that God, I want to live up to what God is expecting from me, because he is my life, he is my existence. I have nothing in my existence besides from him. And therefore, I just want to know and I want to live to the fullest of what Hashem has designed and wanted of me. Then you become completely part of him. Then you achieve the level of Kedoshim. And from that place, you have the ability to unify intense lights with vessels. When we try to, going back to what we said earlier, when we are something other than our God, when we retain an identity, a being, which the way you retain an entity and a being of separateness is by following one's own desire and one's own will. If we allow our own will, our own desire, which is usually governed by where we will get pleasure, and the pleasure is in the ecstasy and in the bliss, and we don't want to let forego on that because we just want to hold on to what makes us feel good instead of asking the deeper question, what am I here for? Not what is here for me, but what am I here for? When I recognize what am I here for, what do you want from me, then I am no more a finite being. And my body is no more limited because my body is just an instrument for the divine. So my body and my physical and my limited psyche is no more really limited, and it can facilitate. Then I become a vessel for the infinite, and I can take those infinite lights and draw it into my. So the subject of the next two Torah portions, the Rebbe says, is actually the very subject that we're learning about over here, this funneling, this unification, this taking this transcendental exile lights and bringing them into vessels. All of this, he says, is emphasized, comes to its full emphasis in the name regarding Mashiach himself, just like it is in exile in general, but regarding Mashiach himself, the Messiah himself, Mashiach, we find the interesting thing. We said, Talmud says, what's the name of Mashiach? And the answer is, he's called the leper. He's called the leper from the house of Rebbe. Rebbe was the founder of the Mishnah, of the Talmud, of the backbone of the Talmud, which is the Mishnah, lived about 100 years after the destruction of the Second Temple. He was very, very good friends with the Roman Caesar. And he was the leader of the Jewish people during that time. But he himself had enormous suffering. So the sages say, who is Mashiach? There's a talk in Sanhedrin, in Tractate Sanhedrin, who is the Messiah? And the Talmud says over there, the various different schools, different yeshivas, everybody said that their headmaster, their teacher, is the Mashiach. So they had very, very great leaders. So the students of Yanai said that Yanai was the Mashiach. And the students of Chizkiyahu said that Chizkiyahu is Mashiach. And the students of Shiloh said that Shiloh is Mashiach. But then the Talmud actually says that who is Mashiach? And then there's another statement that Menachem is Mashiach. And then the students of the Talmud ask these words. They say, if they ask who's Mashiach, and they say, if Mashiach is from those that are living now, that are alive now, then he is Amar Rav. This is what Rav says. Iman, and Rav was a student from Rabbeinu HaKadosh. So Rav says, Iman Chiyahu, if he's from the ones that are alive, then Rabbeinu HaKadosh. He's like our master, Rebbe, the Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, this leader, was such a holy man that they called him our holy teacher. And he's known, even though all the teachers were holy, but he was known as our holy master, our holy teacher. Now, when the Talmud says, so Rashi explains, why does he say it's, what gave him the Rav, what gave him the impetus or the reasoning, or what was compelling reason that if Mashiach is from anybody that's alive right now, it's Rabbeinu HaKadosh, it's his master, Rebbe. So Rashi says, because of two qualities. He's a chassid gomer, he's a perfect, righteous individual, pious person. He has no sins. Suffers, Mashiach is in pain. We ask the question, okay, we understand that. That's part of the deal. Mashiach has to suffer. But why is that his main name? Mashiach is called Metzora. The main idea of that was one of the questions we asked. Much earlier in the discourse, the Rebbe asked, Mashiach's main thing is that he brings redemption to the world. He brings healing to the world. He brings salvation to the world. He elevates all of the world. Why would Mashiach be called the pain, the sufferer, the leper? Based on what we're talking about now, we understand. It's a very, very important concept. When we're looking for the Mashiach, we should not look for a person who is a new individual ushering in new life. Just like redemption in general is not a new era. Not the old era, we turn over a new chapter. The old chapter has gone away and now there's a new chapter. Just like redemption itself is exile redefined, exile enlightened, exile elevated. So too the Mashiach is not a new person that will arrive on the scene from the sky. He will drop down from the sky at the end of time. No! Mashiach is a being, a known being during exile. Actually, someone amongst the Jewish people. And someone like the leader of the Jewish people during the exile. Not a new figure. He is a being who is with the Jewish people in exile. Not only is he with them, and like Rabbeinu, they point to Rabbeinu because he's the leader of the Jewish people. It makes sense for Mashiach to be the leader. But he's the leader during exile. And he suffers the pain of exile, not because he deserves, because there was something lacking, because he has some imperfection, he needs to suffer. It's not his suffering. It's the pain of exile, even though he's perfect. He's like Rashi points out regarding Rabbeinu HaKadosh, he's perfect, but he's suffering the pain of exile. Why? Why? The answer is because the redemption, if he's the redeemer, which means he is the one bringing us the redemption, he must have exile, because you can't make redemption without exile. You can't have birth without pregnancy. So he has to have, he is the most pregnant from everyone else. We are all a little bit pregnant, so we have a little bit pain so that we can have the birth. Mashiach is the most pregnant from everybody. Therefore, he suffers the pain of pregnancy more than anybody else. And that's also the reason why he brings an amazing teaching from his grandfather, again, that Zemel said, like the insight into all of this. He says, why Mashiach, particularly from all suffering, why do we call him, why do we call him a leper? Because a leper, leprosy is, comes, the infliction of leprosy is called a nega. Nega means the infliction of this leprosy is a nega. Nega is the same letters as oneg, which oneg means pleasure. Since Mashiach is coming to birth, he's coming to birth the biggest infinite pleasure ever to be. God's infinite pleasure is going to be revealed in the world, and the world will be bathing in bliss, ecstasy, and unimaginable pleasure and delight. But in order for it to come into the world, it first has to hover above, like we discussed earlier. And when it hovers above, it causes the opposite of the pleasure, it causes pain. Or let's put it this way, in order for it to be born into the world, you first have to be pregnant with the pleasure. And when you're pregnant, when the pleasure is in a state of impregnation, we experience it as the total opposite of pleasure, which means the extreme pain. And the greater the pleasure, the greater the pain of pleasure, the greater the pain of the pregnancy of that pleasure. So he carries the nega because he's really carrying the oneg. It's only during the time of exile it is spelled nega, and then we reformat it, and we get the word oneg. When we reformat the darkness that's around us, we get the pleasure. But this is the important point over here that the Rebbe is bringing out. Mashiach is someone who sits with the Jewish people during the time of exile. He's not a new figure. So if we're closing our eyes and waiting for Mashiach and we're looking for a new person that we don't know of, someone who is going to come from and we don't know of him, no. It should be someone who was with the Jewish people during the time of exile. That would make sense to be the last leader of the Jewish people during the time of exile, who was there in their last and final dark moments. A massive leader, but at the same time, someone who aches the pains of exile. So Rav is saying, if it's Mashiach is supposed to come now, then it's my leader. Who is the one now? Rabbeinu HaKadosh. The one we call Rebbe. So now, in one of the footnote number 67, the phenomenal footnote. So the Rebbe says that before the Talmud discusses and says that Mashiach is Rebbe, if he's from the living, he's Rebbe, we go through a bunch of other possibilities of who Mashiach is. So I told you earlier, it says over there, the Academy of Rebbe Shila says his name was Shila. And it brings a verse for it. The Academy of Rebbe Yanai would claim that his name is Yinon. And it brings a verse that points to Mashiach called Yinon. Yinon means a king. The very Rebbe Chanina, the Academy of Rebbe Chanina, would say Chanina is his name. And he brings a verse to support that. And some say Menachem ben Chizkiyo. So it's interesting. In the footnote, the Rebbe has a whole discussion in the footnote of the footnote. Is it Menachem Plain or Menachem the son of Chizkiyah? And he just talks. It's interesting. We know the Rebbe's his name himself is Menachem. Okay. But that's not enough. The Rebbe continues. And the Rebbe says, just like all these great rabbis pointed to the leader, to their spiritual leader, and said that he was the Mashiach. They had their hopes that he would be the Mashiach. Now the Rebbe is fast forwarding from the Talmudic time, and he's talking and he's saying presently, we Chassidim, who do we say is Mashiach? We say it regarding our teachers. We will say Mashiach's name is Yosef. The previous Chabad Rebbe's name was Yosef Yitzchak. So the Rebbe says, we will declare that Mashiach's name is Yosef. Why? Because there's a verse that implies that Mashiach does the job of Yosef. Yosef Hashem Sheinis Yadeh, that Hashem will stretch out his hand another time, and it uses the word Yosef. He says, we will also say and argue that Mashiach's name is Yitzchak, Isaac, because Yitzchak means laughter. When Mashiach will come, it says the world will be filled with laughter. So Mashiach's name is Yosef Yitzchak. The Rebbe is saying, basically, my father-in-law, the previous Rebbe, he's the Mashiach. Before that, he was talking about the name Menachem being Mashiach, which is his own name. Okay, it's just something to note that the Rebbe discusses this. But to make matters like really interesting, in the footnote to the footnote, the first is two footnotes to the footnote. This is Alta 67. There's a star and there's a footnote to the footnote. When it says that every yeshiva, every academy pointed to their Rebbe and said that they were Mashiach, Rashi translates it a little different. Not that the academy said that their teacher was Mashiach. Rashi, if you look carefully in the words Rashi says every single one of these people expounded on Mashiach's name being the same like his name. Rashi is changing it slightly. Not that they would say it's him. Rashi uses the word he would say it's him. And the Rebbe explains, which is implying that it's not only coming from the students, but it came from the teacher himself. In other words, this idea that there was a rumors, discussions, and people assuming that their leader was Mashiach was not something that you can blame only on the students. It was something that was kind of hinted to or encouraged or spoken of by the leaders themselves. The words of the Rebbe, let's read. I'm Dalsha Rashi. Kol echad yadarish ashish achar shemoy. Everybody darshaned, expounded after his name. So the Rebbe puts in parentheses. Loisha talmidim chitchu. It wasn't the innovation of the students. Sheshmoy kishem rabba. That Mashiach is the name of their leader. It was the students themselves. I'm sorry, it was the teacher themselves. Why is the Rebbe saying this? If I can interject with my own idea. Everybody knows that Lubavitch, the Hasidim, believed the Rebbe is Mashiach. And at this time, when this was going on, there was excitement or that rumors intensified enormously. And people were signing petitions to put their name and accept the Rebbe as Mashiach and the like, and were handing it into the Rebbe and so on and so on. It was all going on during this time. Actually, the petition started after this Fabringen, after the Shabbos, next week, because of all this energy. And we would imagine that there would be a lot of people that will say, and there are people still saying it today, the Rebbe never encouraged it. It didn't come from him. It was a couple of lunatics, radicals, people that were like kind of trying to derail Chabad and pull it into and make it turn it into a messianic cult. So it's really interesting that the Rebbe in the talk, and that's one of the reasons I'm teaching these talks, because I would like everybody to, you know, people say things and they're not basing it on anything. I'd like to share with you what it actually says and what the Rebbe printed and what he had himself edited. He had edited his talk and he himself wrote this. And he's talking again. He's talking about how everybody pointed to their teacher, a human being alive in their life, saying that he's the Mashiach. And the Rebbe doesn't leave it by that, just quoting that that's what happened the days of the Talmud. He says, and we will say it's our Rebbe. I am a Chabad Chassid of my Rebbe. I say it's my Rebbe. But I know you guys are saying it's me. And I don't want people to come and say that, what, that this wasn't encouraged by the... No, it is. Because actually it was the teachers themselves that instituted it and not the students. The students went along with it. It's just an interesting note that the Rebbe felt that he has to put that in, which I think is very telling. Because I believe very strongly, and as we will still see as we're going to be learning these all the time, that the Rebbe was fanning the flames of this entire messianic fervor, pointing to the Rebbe himself. The Rebbe was fanning these flames every week. And even though he did not kind of say it openly, and sometimes he even quelled it when it got out of hand, but yet at the same time, the Rebbe was like... from the back end, throwing kerosene on this fire and fueling it. Okay, so we're already 58. I don't want to go more than an hour. So we will stop the class over here. And I owe you one more class now on this thing because we have to finish chapter, Perek Tes, Yud Aleph, another six. We can all do in one class because it's not as intense. We'll quicken it up. Just Hashem, tomorrow in the afternoon, I want to be able to do it in the morning, we will complete this Dvar Malchus instead of our hope that I can do it in three. But this is a very fundamental one. And I hope that I can do it in three, but it's going to take four. Okay, everyone be healthy and wealthy. And we should have Mashiach here tonight very soon.